Maybe Saurabh, you can start things off maybe by giving a little bit about what is Facebook.
Briefly, what Facebook, as we all know, was created in around 2004 by Mark Zuckerberg, and it's basically a social network that allows users to connect with people, businesses, and organizations. Subscribers or users of Facebook can post updates and respond to the posts of others, and they're also allowed to share media files. Over the years, it has proven to be the most dominant form of social networking platform. Means even though I have my doubts whether people are using it as much as they used to in the past, but it is necessary that you need to have an account on Facebook. Means that should be there, and means you're at you should.
Why are you doubting that people are using it or no? I mean, the monthly active users, even at this point, seem to be at 1.5 billion people.
Right? Yeah, but I read an article a few days back, and they have their concerns. It's primarily what they're saying is that means you go there once in a while, maybe once in a week, not as a regular user or a subscriber, and that is only to make yourself updated with what is happening and how means what recent posts are there. But the engagement per se is not as high as that was there 4 or 5 years back. I was reading this when Zuckerberg introduced Thread, so that article came out, and there only I came to know that, yeah, their subscriber base remains the same and is also growing. But the issue here is that they are not as actively engaged as in the past, at least on Facebook, the platform itself. But you need to have an account there. Means if you don't have an account, that's not considered to be good, at least in your social circle. So that part is there. But the engagement per se, I'm repeating it again, that is what we really need to know is that how much time they're spending on Facebook and whether that has increased or that has remained the same over the past few years. But what I could gather from a few articles which I was reading over the past few days, my understanding is that the time spent has declined, the engagement has declined, but yes, obviously, the number of users has remained same or maybe increasing, but it is primarily because of social pressure, or you need to be you need to align yourself with, okay, everybody has social media account, and that too on Facebook, so you need to also have. But
I think there's another angle to this, in the sense that since we're talking about Meta as a whole, even though I think time spent on Facebook might have reduced, but I think it has kind of shifted to another Meta property, which is Instagram.
Yes.
Even though one of their properties is probably not doing well, another one, which was amazing acquisition, people are flocking from one house to another, which belongs to the same owner.
That is the whole point, that they have understood, means at least the article was very clear that Zuckerberg has understood that people have some sort of, maybe I won't say boredom, but some sort of fatigueness with using the same platform and trying to give them something new maybe, and that is why the shift over the years from Facebook to Instagram, then to something else, and then finally introducing Thread. And we all know that Thread has done at least remarkably well. Means in 4 days, it's a blockbuster product, at least if you look it in terms of the number of days which it took to acquire 100 million users. Means nobody else has been able to do that until now. So that is one cool stuff that he has thought about, is that giving them a new platform, and that's why. But still, if we talk only about Facebook as a platform, it's still there, very relevant. But yes, as you correctly said, people are hopping across, over platforms and trying to, I think, get into new modes through which they can interact rather than keep sticking to with Facebook over the means rather than sticking to Facebook?
I think here, at least my intuition is like the new generation does not like not. I'm not sure I'm placing a value judgment on the Facebook product, on the usability of Facebook, but I think generation generally does like to move on to like newer things. And I think people who use Facebook, I think the new generation might feel that, you know, this is for my parents or this is for my relatives. And, you know, I want to be on something cooler where only my friends are on. And I think earlier that was Instagram, but I think even now, I think now I feel Instagram also is moving to that uncle era. I don't know. Yeah, any thoughts on that?
Means, yeah, if you look at the number of, means even if I come to the thread one, thread, if you see the demographics, I think that, means what I recall from a few, means the stats, the out of those 100 million subscribers, close to 60 is to 70 million, those who hopped into the first go when thread came out, those around 60 to 70% of them were into the 18 to 25 bracket. So means you are correct in saying that the younger generation is actually shifting into the other platforms. And I think, yeah, as you correctly said, that it is a little bit cooler than the previous platforms, as well as we all like to, we know that we all like to try to get into new technologies, new platforms. And yeah, obviously the amount of risk rather means which younger generation can take is much higher, it's much higher than what maybe a baby boomer or millennials who were close to the baby boomer generation would be able to take. So yeah, means if I look at like this, on Facebook, I will be there on Facebook if I am a Generation Z means user, but that is primarily from the perspective of being in loop with my social circle. But obviously my primary preferences would shift towards more dynamic, younger sort of platform, younger in terms of the number of days through, in which it was launched, in which it is learned, as well as I think there is an issue of trying, giving it a go. Means these are typically the people whom we get categorize as the very early adopters. So younger generation in general are more closer to very early adopters. So yeah, Facebook is there. But as a company, if you look at into Meta means then the shift is generally towards the platforms which are new to the market.
So let me ask you this, both of you, are you both on Instagram?
I am there, but
I am not on any social media platform.
Yeah,
you're not on any social media, is it, Arpita?
Yeah, I am not on any social media platform. So my opinion, about anything, Facebook or Facebook's leadership, is completely kind of based on what I have been reading in published sources. And if you ask, have I ever personally experienced it? I would say no. But definitely, I have experienced a lot of people in the society who are, you know, either getting a lot of motivation and encouragement from these social media platforms when they have great number of followers and all. And unfortunately, I have seen people going into depression. And I'm not saying Facebook per se. I'm saying, you know, these social media platforms, because somebody commented something or because they're not getting the number of followers they were seeking. And so, yeah, I mean, this is sort of thing I have seen around in the society. But personally, no, I haven't experienced. I don't know what it looks like when you read the fake news or when you read the real news and you want to forward that news. I haven't experienced those stuff. So it is, my perception is more based on published sources. And when I say published sources, I mean surveys, reports, and not blogs and Wikipedia. I mean authentic resources.
Fair enough. I want to go back to Saurabh's point on threads, actually. I feel I feel Saurabh is giving too much credit to Threads in the sense that I agree that it got like users in 4 days. But I mean, I feel like there was a lot of excitement in the beginning and then it's kind of fizzled out. And, you know, nowadays nobody talks about Thread. Is that fair? Or like, do you think it was like, also just to add on that, I mean, so when I think about the 100 million number, I feel like since they marketed it through Instagram, like everybody who was on Instagram, they were like, they were given that link to join Threads. So out of 1.5 billion people, like, I don't know, it was not even like a 10% conversion, I think. So
I was about to come to that. So, means then this is from the perspective of the first one. Now, as you correctly said, that it was set through Instagram. And if you look at the profile of the Instagram users, you will find out that around 60% are in the age group of 18 to 34. Dominated primarily by the male people, means male subscribers who are around close to 17 to 18%, who are around, I should say, out of the 60%, more than 55 or 60%. So yeah, when Thread was circulated to them, it means obviously people, younger generation who were into this particular age group shifted, and obviously in the first 4 days, as you correctly said, a lot many people moved on there. But if you still look on it, over 2 weeks time, it got close to around, I think, 150-160 million users. Engagement metrics will always plunge. Okay, I mean, say people take, because these are the people who will be the early adopters, and once they begin to circulate the word of mouth, then only things will come back. But if you look at the people who have adopted it, not only in the age group of 18 to 34, if you look at countries from where this demographics for Thread has come into, you will find out that the highest contributor is India, around 33%, followed by, I think, Brazil, and then by US. So the decline is decline in people in hopping towards it. News will, I see, it's just like this. For the first 2-3 weeks, people will go, then it slows down a bit, because these people who will be adopting it early will use it and then spread the word. So that part is definitely there. And I think we are in that particular period where these people who have adopted it early are still trying to make sense of it. And then maybe in the next few weeks, we'll see again an upward trend. If it declines in the next few weeks, then I think Zuckerberg needs to worry a bit.
I mean, I used it for... So I signed up immediately when that was launched. And the first day, I think I was on the app for like 5 hours, 4 to 5 hours. Yeah, no kidding. I was there for like 4 or 5 hours. Next day, I barely spent like 10 minutes. And after that, I haven't opened the app. It's still on my phone, but I haven't opened it. So there are two aspects to this, right? So one is... obviously the Twitter competition, but like one way to think about this on the Meta perspective is like Meta is notoriously known for building products which have enormous scale, right? I mean, I think three to four of the products that they own have north of 1 billion people using it. I think Facebook has more than 1 billion, Instagram has more than 1 billion, WhatsApp has more than 1 billion, Messenger has close to 750-800 million people. So Facebook generally has this ability to build products that scale really, really well, where other companies have not really able to, like they have not been able to replicate that. You know, Snapchat is stuck at 300-400 million, Twitter is stuck at 300-400 million, even Reddit is stuck at, you know, 300-400 million. Everybody hits that number and then kind of struggles to scale. But Facebook has this ability to really scale products to enormous numbers. In terms of leadership, have you seen, like, I mean, in the past 2 years, obviously, Mark has been under a lot of scrutiny. He's been called on to, like, at the government testimony, etc. What do we know about his early days? I mean, was he always like this as a leader? How has he kind of evolved, how has he evolved his leadership style over the years? Any comments on that?
Yeah, sure. Saurabh, shall I answer this? Okay, so you're talking about the early days. You know, early days, I would say they were like golden days. They were like honest days. For example, if we talk about the Glassdoor survey as to, and when I say golden days, I'm talking from the stakeholders' perspective. You know, I'm talking about what did employees felt about him? What did his mentors, what did his funders thought about him? So for example, in 2013, if we look at the Glassdoor ratings about the CEO approval, Zuckerberg stood first. He had 99% approval score. And you know, that's kind of really rare. And that's kind of really top for any CEO. That's like really an achievement when on this public forum, you get a 99% approval score. Now, unfortunately, some adverse events happened. Cambridge Analytica happened. And immediately after that, by, 2021, I would say his approval rating was 88% among the Facebook employees. So if you say 88%, yeah, that may sound fine, but look where he was earlier, 99%, and then you know, kind of it fell down to 88%. Then again, from the customer's perspective, earlier customers, like 79% consumers as per survey, they felt, oh, we are safe on Facebook. Our data is safe on Facebook. Our conversations are all private. The privacy is maintained. And then immediately after this scandal, Cambridge Analytica scandal, only 28% of Facebook users felt that, you know, their conversation, their interaction, their chats are safe on Facebook. So yeah, for sure, as you rightly said, this was not always the case. You know, he was a star, and we really hope he continues to remain the star with his new venture Meta. But definitely there has been this period of what we can call as a drift, where his reputation among stakeholders, and be that consumers, and when we say consumers, I'm not just talking about the younger generation, because see, younger generation, those who are in their teenage, they won't understand. Oh, so what if, you know, the political campaigns, they were kind of positioned or they were shown to us based on what we were seeking from the government, in terms of their Facebook conversation, because maybe they are not even actively voting, you know, they are in their teenage. So for them, this privacy and all this maybe is not that relevant. So they are not concerned. But if we look at adults, like Sora was talking about, if we talk about baby boomers or millennials for that reason, yes, it definitely impacted them. If we look at the mentors, like I was talking about, is one of the mentors, now I do not recall his name, who kind of supported and guided Mark Zuckerberg throughout his journey. But when he revealed to, he was always very appreciative of Mark Zuckerberg, you know, that he has this enthusiasm and skill and vision, and he can actually, you know, being a disruption in the field of social media. But when he kind of brought this news about Cambridge Analytica to him, and as to how the data was supposed to be used, Mark Zuckerberg, according to him, kind of, you know, ignored the message. Maybe at that point in time, maybe because of competitive pressure, he was being more driven by the profits, because when you kind of buy such kind of data, you're definitely paying leader a lot of money. Right? I mean, it's kind of assumed. So maybe the profit somewhere became his priority. And that is what a lot of funders, a lot of stakeholders felt, that somewhere profit was taking over the ethical decision making. So yes, you know, somewhere there around 2017-18, things became to deteriorate. And then this fake news, as far as fake news and echo chambers.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but before we go to fake news, but I mean, it's a public operation, right? I mean, it's a corporation, right? So profit should be their priority, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Profit has to be one of the priorities, you know, but in the world of business, at least as professors, what I feel is that we always teach students about balanced performance. You know, even shareholders today, they are not just looking at the profitability. They are not just looking at, okay, how many new subscribers you are bringing. They, even investors, even shareholders are looking at the aspects like how satisfied are employees in your organization. If we look at a lot of survey conducted by McKinsey and other research firms, they are, you know, they there was recently report, I think, by McKinsey that revealed that how hedge funds and other institutional investors are now looking at the indirect data. So, for example, you know, if the job postings from a company, if they are declining, if employee satisfaction score on a public forum like Glassdoor and other, if that is declining, it's a signal that something is not going right in the organization. And they are drawing clues from that, and they are penalizing the firm prior to any deterioration happens in financial performance. So yes, financial performance definitely is one of the priority, but what we always talk about is that there has to be a balance in terms of how you treat your stakeholders. Profit at the cost of what? You know, for example, if we look at the energy firms, you do not invest in renewable energy now, and if you keep on exploiting your current resources in terms of you know, what you call as fossil fuels, you might be much more profitable, but at the cost of what? Harming environment, causing greenhouse gases and global warming. So now laws have been in place. We have ESG targets that all firms across all industries have to reach. Similarly, if we talk about the social media firms or Mark Zuckerberg for that matter, yes, profit is important, but at the cost of what? At the cost of you are making your customers sign some kind of, you know, a privacy agreement. Actually, it's not an agreement. I should take that sentence back. There was no such agreement that your, you know, probably information is going to remain private or whatever it is. But breaching somebody's trust and selling off that data to, you know, third parties, knowing how it can be used, and forget about how it can be used, simply kind of selling that data to third party probably is not ethical. So this is not, you know, about you are here earning profit at the cost of, I don't know, your consumer's trust. That probably
so
is not.
I'm not an expert. So the problem here is I don't know much about the Cambridge Analytica scandal. I know it is a scandal, but I don't know the legalities of it. I don't know if was there something illegal that was the data sharing illegal there?
No, it was more about ethics rather than legality. Unfortunately, legality and ethics may not always overlap. Unfortunately, they may not always 100% overlap. So it was, more about ethics. So generally, you know, when government frame policies, they try to cover all the ethical aspects. For example, if we talk about the pharmaceutical industry, it might be, you know, legal if you skip one or the two stages of clinical trials, but it might be unethical, right? So anyways, government does try, policymaker do try that all ethical angles are covered in legality. But still, you know, even if something is left, then of course, as CEOs of the company, we have to somewhere rely on what is more important, ethics or, the profit. And now we understand that sometimes why only Mark Zuckerberg, most CEOs, and why only social media companies, in other startups also, in other companies also, we see that in this race of showing more revenue growth, showing more profitability, firms do different kind of unconventional things, you know, which is not appropriate. Then why only are we talking about Mark Zuckerberg? One of the reasons for that is that, I mean, if you look at other firms, for example, Uber, hardly making any profits, Airbnb, hardly making any profits, but, you know, their revenues are soaring. But we are not talking about these firms. Why are we talking about Mark Zuckerberg? We're talking about Mark Zuckerberg because what has happened in terms of creation of echo chambers or fake news or leaking of data has more ethical implications rather than financial implications. So that's what I'm trying to say. You have to really care about all the stakeholders. It's not just about your profits. It's not just about, I have invested as shareholder in your company. So, hey, you know, if Facebook grows, I'm going to get good return on my investment. That's okay. But at the cost of what? At the cost of those poor people who were safely having safe conversation on Facebook, but it was leaked. At the cost of, Facebook not, and for that matter, other social media companies also not taking appropriate actions to stop the spread of fake news, though they, everyone is claiming that we took the steps to stop the fake news. But now, if you look, for example, in UK, government has very clearly said, any fake news, we find evidence of any fake news floating on your platform, they are going to be charged billions of dollars as penalty. So now you look at the kind of investment these social media platforms are making in terms of trying to combat against fake news. It's kind of remarkably different than what they were doing earlier. And that is where I was trying to say that somewhere, you know, legality and ethics, they overlap. But sometimes because of some loopholes, if we do not have law, then these CEOs, founders, they try to leverage on that. So yes, government policymakers, they do act, you know, when they have to act. But in the meantime, we expect, all the CEOs, all the founders to behave in the most appropriate ethical manner. Because if you are into losses, that is never going to make national headlines. But if you conduct an unethical act, that is definitely going to make headlines. So your reputation becomes more important. So financially, you might be making profits, but for how long? Your reputation is at stake. People are not perceiving you positively. So then that becomes an issue.
So just want to push this a little further. I mean, could this be an economic angle as an ethical angle, in the sense that are people more pissed that Facebook has my data and Facebook is monetizing my data, but I'm not getting any money from this data? It's actually an economic angle, but people can't go to this economic, people can't probably raise this economic angle. But the easiest angle they can do is ethics, that, you know, what they're doing is wrong. So,
that's a very interesting question, Ryan. Yeah, absolutely. See, I would like to, you know, share one stand-up comedian joke here in this context. Like, there was this one stand-up comedian who was, just to make the audience laugh, was kind of, you know, saying all bad things about his sister as to how her sister is money-minded, to what extent she can go, blah, blah, blah. And then audience was like, you know, how can you, you know, bitch about your own sister? So he said, don't feel bad. When I showed this video to my sister, she said 10% commission is mine. So there also she, and that made the audience really laugh. So the point here I'm trying to say, when we say consumers are upset, yes, maybe, you know, some of them may say, oh, if you are making money out of my data, then where is my share? Definitely some consumers, Facebook users may feel that. But can we generalize that? To the best of my knowledge, I think the first thought that would come to any average user is not that where is my monetary share. The first thing that would come to my mind, oops, had I known my data is being shared, I wouldn't have used certain words. I wouldn't have, you know, written something which any third party could read. You know, people write different kind of stuff on these platforms. So to the best of my knowledge, maybe some users felt that where is my share? You are making money out of me. Maybe, you know, some percentage of consumers may feel like that. But to the best of my knowledge, I don't think that would be the first thought that would have clicked them. The first thought would have been the breach of trust. And I have been thinking I'm safely conversing here, but third parties are seeing my data. There might be a sense of embarrassment. Oh my God, I use slangs, I use this, you know, in those writing.
I'm so sorry. No, I'm so sorry. So, but just to be clear, I don't think it works that way, in the sense, I mean, I don't think they read our personal, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think they read our personal messages.
No. They are doing data mining. They are doing data mining. You know, correct. I mean, so they are not like kind of reading individuals, thing.
They get the sort of metadata, right? Like, who am I talking to? What are my interests? That kind of data.
Absolutely. So, you know, so this age group people have this kind of interest, these kind of people, this personality people is looking this thing from the government or something like that. Definitely, that is how companies are using it. But users are not that much knowledgeable about how exactly data is being used. You know, so that sense of a threat, that sense of insecurity may always pop up, you know, as their first thought. That sense of breach of trust may always pop up as their first thought rather than good. You know, you are making money, but where is my share? But again, as I said, there could be like I that's why I shared the stand up joke. There might be some people who would be like, great, you can make money out of me, but give me my share. There could be some, but, you know, not generally speaking.
So on the breach of trust, actually, I'm not convinced at all. I have never heard any sentiment from any person, at least, and this may be my friend circle. I don't know if I'm hanging out with the wrong people, that where, you know, where somebody says, man, I trusted Facebook, or man, I trusted, I don't know, any company XYZ, and they cheat, you know, they cheated me, or, you know, I had so much trust in them, now that trust is lost. I've never heard that. I don't know. I feel like implicitly consumers make this, you know, this devil's argument. I mean, what is that? The devil's, what is that? The sign of the devil or some shit. I mean, something like that, where, you know, some shady thing is happening probably in the back end where they're selling you data, or, you know, they are selling your data to somebody else, but, you know, you're probably trusting them enough that, you know, there seems to be some compromise that the consumers and the companies make, you know, that they'll give you free services, but, you know, some of your data will be shared somewhere else, and, you know, they'll make money out of that. So anyways, so that's where I'm coming down at it in that sense.
Surely. I mean, absolutely. I was just trying to figure out if there are some research, you know, that kind of points out to how did the trust level shifted. And I think I quoted this when we were doing Cambridge, and when we were discussing Cambridge Analytica thing, that earlier 71% consumers felt that their data is secured with Facebook, but later on, post this scandal, it fell down to 28%. So yes, definitely the trust level did went down, but are consumers not using Facebook enough because of this trust reason only? Or, you know, okay, this could be one of the reasons, but there are other reasons also. That is definitely something we need to look into.
And the thing you were mentioning about the Glassdoor, initially he had extremely high Glassdoor reviews, and now it's gone down, mostly due to the controversies. Is that fair? Like, mostly due to the controversies and
things that have happened? There must be, you know, several things going within the organization as well. For example, recently Meta was in news that they have laid off a lot of employees despite them being given, you know, very good performance rating. And some of the employees have shown discontent that despite them working very hard, they are not getting the kind of ratings they used to get earlier. So definitely these reasons are definitely adding up, and there could be employees who maybe, you know, are suggesting Mark Zuckerberg to do certain things to kind of stop the controversies against Facebook, and maybe, you know, he's not buying those decisions. So as an employee, that could also upset them. Then overall negative perception, negative reputation about Facebook, so that may also demotivate employees. So absolutely, there is going to be a whole bunch of reasons, you know, financial, human resource related reason, how the work culture is changing, how people at large are perceiving. So I mean, I'm not sure if today, after all this, if I go and tell my neighbor I work for Facebook, I don't know, you know, if I should be proud or I should be skeptical to say that, given, you know, the way Facebook is earning its reputation in the media, at least in the past few years, right?
I disagree with that, actually. I don't know. I actually feel working at Facebook is a very highly reputable position to be in. I think that's my opinion. I don't know.
For most employees, but as I said, 88% approval is still high. You know, it's not like it is 40%, 50% that your company is completely in doldrums, absolutely. But if we talk about where Zuckerberg was, where he could have reached, and where he is now, you know, I mean, we are not saying, oh, he's completely sank, he's completely gone. That's not what we are discussing. We are discussing from what Zuckerberg could have been, you know, what kind of disruption, positive disruption he would have brought to the society by virtue of his social media platform is definitely far away from, you know, what is happening these days. So as I said, yes, you know, most employees may still take pride, but those who are not taking pride, those who are showing negative feelings towards Facebook, definitely there could be a number of reasons: public reputation, what is happening internally, maybe they are being made to work very hard for very long hours and then getting, you know, pathetic appraisals, layoffs are happening. And see, the minute layoff happens, you know, sentiments go a little bit down. You do feel demotivated, even if you are one of the best employee for that company. But it definitely, you know, kind of brings negative sentiments, negative emotion. Okay, my friends, my peers, they are being laid off. Next could be me, right? So all these things. And I must say, it's not just Facebook. This layoff is becoming very common in tech industry, definitely more in social media company these days. But these aspects do add to the negative. So if we say, is his rating down because of what has happened in the media or because of the way he has been positioned in the media? I would say not completely. Definitely, there are a lot of things going on internally also. There could be disagreements with the top management. There could be some changes in the work culture. There could be layoffs happening. A lot of things which cumulatively have led to, you know, his ratings going down on these platforms.
I'll just add a few minutes to Arpita and say that I was just scrolling through a few data here and there, and then came to know that even in January 2023, when Glassdoor came out with the most the top 10 places in the top 10 companies in the US where to work for, and what they found out was that Facebook dropped out of that list for the Meta dropped out of that list for the first time since 2011, and the major reason that workers who voted, who were surveyed, they said is flexibility, transparency, and communication within the organization has collapsed. So I think it adds to what
the flexibility part is. Is it the remote versus in office part, or are there other?
No, I think it is primarily doing with the remote working and the office part. But I think the other two are also important: that communication and transparency. So these three are the major reasons why they have been out of that list after almost 10, 11 years. But that said, Apple has also dropped out of that list. So.
Oh, then the list doesn't mean much. Okay. Okay. So we discussed, Facebook has so many good properties. Meta has so many good properties. Yeah. It had Facebook. It still has Facebook, but obviously maybe... as discussed earlier, with reduced engagement times, time spent, etc. But we touched on Instagram as well. It also has WhatsApp, which we didn't touch on. Recently started Threads as well. So what is the need? But I think we all know recently, the company pivoted to at least publicly going into the metaverse, and the branding was done via rebranding the entire company as renaming it as Meta. Why is this important? Why did they rebrand? What are they hoping to achieve with this?
Saurabh, would you take this? Okay, so like we were discussing about the negative things that were happening with Facebook. So we would call it as, you know, some weaknesses of Facebook. And here was an opportunity coming up with metaverse technology. So definitely Mark Zuckerberg was investing into this technology alongside with Facebook. You know, if we talk in terms of R&D, generally what companies do, they gradually do R&D. They first test the product and, you know, there is some pilot version of it. And if it is successful, they go on a mega scale, for that kind of a launch. Typically, this is the trend for any product or for any service. But the kind of negative reputation, again, thanks to media and, you know, other surveys that were happening. And once you have, you know, a kind of a social perception, then everyone wants to read, everyone wants to see the same kind of thing. Yes, 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 everything is bad about, you know, Zuckerberg and his Facebook. That was the kind of perception that was developing at that point in time. So he thought, okay, here I have an opportunity. And with a metaverse technology, we were anyways investing in this. Let's pace up. Let's fasten up. And rather than testing it, let's just do it. You know, let's just get into the launch mode and let's just rebrand ourselves. Let's just become more about metaverse rather than being just a social media platform. And the timing, I would say, although there is a lot of controversy between experts that was this the right time to launch Meta with this metaverse technology, I personally feel probably that was the best shot. Could have taken with reputation of Facebook declining, he would have done two things, either work towards rebuilding the reputation of Facebook, or let's just do something new. Let's distract the mind of the people from what is happening on Facebook, and let's do something new, probably more honestly, more ethically. And given metaverse was already happening, companies like Google, Microsoft, to the best of my knowledge, they were also investing in augmented reality, virtual reality kind of stuff. So it was like, okay, you know, this technology is definitely going to come. So let's be the first mover in terms of making it more commercializable. So probably these were the two reasons. A, there was an opportunity. B, he was already investing into it, maybe not at a mega scale. And C, the kind of reputation, financial performance, like when he launched Meta at that year, it was for the first time probably where the growth of subscribers decreased, and for that reason share prices fell. So it was like, before this happens any further and before the turnaround becomes kind of very complicated for my company, let's rebrand it, let's try to become known more about metaverse rather than social media platform. So in next 5 to 10 years, as these conversations go down and as metaverse picks up, you know, we would come out on a fresh slate. So probably that was his perspective, and I personally feel that this was the best timing to save Facebook from further reputation decline and also to leverage on the emerging technology.
I think the last time. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, I just like to add one more thing up here is that, means again, I was following it back a few weeks, following on an article a few days, weeks back. For Zuckerberg, the problem has always remained that, Apple has iOS. It owns a platform. Google has Android. It owns a platform. Zuckerberg doesn't have anything. And I think that is one opportunity that he found out, that I should go there. Means, and maybe in metaverse he will find that, but then again, if you read about his in the past few weeks, what is coming out, he has done spectacularly in terms of generating revenues, ad revenues rather. Means Meta's ad revenues are at a historical high right now, so he is doing fantastic. But if you look at what he said to the shareholders, it's primarily that he has his vision. He wants to own a platform, and maybe that may be in metaverse, but he doesn't know whether that is going to happen even in the next 10 years. And he can't say that it will happen. But I think that primary urge within him that, okay, so he is among the top 3 or 4 technology companies in the world, and top 2, like, let us say, Apple and Google, they have a platform. I don't have one. I want one. So I think that has made him shift a bit towards metaverse. But I think he is quite pragmatic, in at least in accepting that this is not going to happen right now. See, when 3D came long time back in 1980s, people didn't accept it in the first go. It took a lot, many years. And Meta, I think, also will take some time. And maybe in the next few years, he will be there. And being, I think, since he has made the first bet, so at least we will hope that he is able to crack it at the first, he will be the first one to crack it. Yeah.
So I want to be very clear. So first, I want to be clear on the platform issue. So when you say Google has Android and Apple has its own platform, by that I'm understanding it's iOS platform. iOS is a platform where other developers come and build on top of it, and then you kind of own that network, and you kind of own that platform. And App Store is like one manifestation of that platform where they kind of own that, and Play Store is for Google. Is that right? So, like, I completely agree with you that, you know, this definitely seems to be a platform play. But I don't know. Like, I feel like it was trying to Mark invested so early into like AR/VR. Sorry, Mark invested so early into VR, thinking that he would get a head start. But I feel last time we spoke, Apple had not come out with Vision Pro, right? I mean, it was only in the recent. So when we spoke last time, that we did not have that data point, but now we do. I mean, recently Apple did come out with Vision Pro, and they seem to be, you know, pretty. Even though the price point is extremely high, they seem to know what they're doing, and you know, in the next few years, they seem to be at a place where they can really compete with Meta on the AR/VR play. So I don't know. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, because Apple also seems to be going really strong at this AR/VR space as well.
You want to answer that?
No, Peter, you carry on. Yeah.
See, exactly the point, Ryan. So you see gradually now the conversation, and now kind of what is priority for Zuckerberg. That is now very organically shifting, right? Now we are no longer discussing as to what will happen to my data, or am I safe, or XYZ, or fake news, blah, blah, blah. Now we are discussing whose product is going to be better, who is going to launch product in the market first, right? So now it is becoming more competitive battle in the field of metaverse. And probably that was, you know, one of the objectives for Mark Zuckerberg for diversifying or for expanding into metaverse, is that let's shift away from this. There is no point telling the society, oh, I'm neat and clean, blah, blah, blah. Let's do something different. So that's the first point. So I think to some extent, the minute we are now concerned about, oh, is Apple going to lead the race, or is Zuckerberg going to lead the race? I think he has achieved his first objective. Let's strip the conversation, right?
So just on your first point, but where I disagree with you, I feel, but you seem to be suggesting it's mostly a PR play, like the whole intention of the, is that fair or?
No, we cannot say that the whole intention is the PR play, because you can't be doing R&D, you can't be pouring billions of dollars for just PR play. It's kind of a win-win situation. As I said, opportunity is lying there, and here is my weakness. Let me leverage on this opportunity and just do away with my weakness. So it's, you know, with one stone, what is that proverb, sort of, you know, with one stone I'm trying to kind of, you know, have sight on two birds. I do not recall that proverb, but the thing is that I will diversify, I will expand, I will monetize this metaverse technology, and at the same time I will also be able to handle my deteriorating reputation in the field of social media, right? So when I'm saying, the moment we are talking about this conversation, whose product is going to be better, who is going to launch you know, the product first in the market. So to some extent, this weakness point is now covered. You know, the minute shareholders are now focusing on, the minute stakeholders are now focusing on, okay, you know, who is going to be the first in the race. So this issue gets, you know, somewhere subdued. So one of the objectives, I would say, is probably he's achieving that. Let this negative reputation go down. Now, talking about who is going to win the race, definitely, you know, there are to my mind comes three players: Microsoft, Apple, and Meta, who are aggressively investing in this platform. If we talk about in terms of efforts, who is making more efforts? We cannot at this point in time comment on customers' responsiveness to the product, maybe too early. If we talk about in terms of who is investing the most, who is making most efforts, to the best of my knowledge, it seems to be a Meta. And the reason for that is the kind of poaching he is doing to get those AR and VR experts, because there is a dearth of talent in this field, and you really need expert in this field. The kind of compensation he is offering, you know, people from Microsoft are quitting and joining Meta. And there has been this debate, I would like to quote one of my students, because we are teaching them about ethics and everything. So one of my students asked me, so professor, are you saying that employees are willing to work for an unethical company if they are paying higher compensation? And how do I answer that? You know, I'm like, okay, you know, sometimes it depends on what compensation you are giving and at what level you are willing to not exactly compromise, but give benefit of doubt, you know? So high that, you know, okay, I'll give you benefit of doubt and I'll work for your company. So that's the kind of coaching he's doing. Yeah, right.
The thing that comes to my mind there is, so everybody has a price and, you know, Zuckerberg should be throwing that price. But I think for Mark, very lucky that like Apple is in the race now, because whenever Apple is doing something, it seems like they bring in a lot of seriousness to the industry, where once they bring a product out, everybody starts really paying attention to that product. And like Meta, I mean, Mark was doing AR VR for so long, but apparently they had this Quest headset for AR/VR. I did not know of it, actually. I did not know that they had this headset. I only knew of Oculus, but only once Apple came out with their Vision Pro product did people start comparing it to Oculus and this Quest. That's when I got to know that, even Meta has their own product. So I think in like timing-wise or just in general, I think Mark should be kind of thankful to Apple that, you know, now they're in the race. Now it starts getting serious. I think more money will probably get pumped into this as well. Right.
Absolutely. And Apple is known for innovation. You know, you talk about innovation, and Apple is the company that comes to the mind, especially in the tech field. So this competition is driving the whole industry, hopefully in a very positive way, where right now the focus is on the features, the quality of those features, and how will they entice and engage a customer. So yes, definitely, you know, I mean, there is going to be a lot of competition. There has to be lots of innovation. And whosoever wins this race is you know, going to be probably the winner for the time.
You're on mute, Saurabh.
You can, I mean, see, since you brought into means discussion Quest, means if you just compare these two products, means Quest 2 with Vision Pro, means they are hardly, I think, comparable, because the amount of means innovation which means Advita has mentioned means is there in Apple's device is means it's in a different league altogether, and if it's Meta or if it's any other company, they really need to catch on to this. Obviously, there is the price differential is enormous. You talk about Quest 2, maybe it's how much the highest version is $600-$700, while Vision Pro maybe $3,500. But if the functionalities that it provides we used to use these things in research, and now they are giving those like, for example, the pupillometer, the eye gaze, the hands-on movements. We use those in research, but what Apple has done, it has packaged them very beautifully and put it for as a consumer product. And we really must say what Arpita has said. If you talk about innovation, it is they. And if we just compare these two products, I don't think that they are at all comparable. And Meta really needs to work very hard to reach to at least to this Vision Pro level. Going beyond that, obviously, is a different game altogether. But at least to reach this means it's quite difficult. They have hand gestures, they have eye gazers, they have pupillometers, they have everything packaged into that. Then they have 4K video.
For a $3,500 price point, I mean.
Yeah, I'm not denying that. But you know, the Apple consumer base is actually very, very loyal to them. They are willing to go for it. See, Samsung sells more mobile than Apple. But Apple is still the most profitable mobile company because they don't care about that, but their margins are higher, they charge premium, and they're succeeding with that. So, means I don't think they're worried that much about the price point right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with Saurabh. They may form their own individual strategy group where maybe, you know, Meta is probably trying to target a more cost-conscious consumer. I'm just saying that may happen. I'm not saying that is what it is doing. And Apple becomes more of a, you know, quality symbol but in the field of metaverse. That may happen. So as I'm saying, and as Saurabh also mentioned, it's difficult to kind of, you know, because innovation is the core competence of Apple. So it might be difficult to beat Apple in their own game. Having said that, we are not saying that, you know, that Meta is going to fail in this industry. Absolutely no, but definitely Meta has a lot of what I would say as positive challenges, you know, to go through and to develop some unique, innovative, enticing products using metaverse technology, which could really entice consumers. And Meta is definitely working towards that. You know, as I said, that it's the employees who are developing those technology, and once you poach them from Apple and Microsoft, it is really wait and watch scene. I think Meta would definitely be one of the leading players in this field of metaverse.
You included Microsoft in this as well. Am I missing something?
No, in the sense that, so Microsoft had invested into AR and VR, they were into AR and VR, and they have a very good team who are specifically doing R&D for augmented reality, virtual reality. And they have been very recently, they have announced that now they are going to invest aggressively in the metaverse technology also. But before they could invest, their employees are being poached by Meta. So we don't know what's happening at the... Maybe that's one of the reasons they have slowed down. As I said, there is a talent dearth in this field, and you really need very skilled employees for AR and VR. So that is something that, you know, Zuckerberg is really working on. So it's definitely wait and watch as to
who this. Just briefly, like to add something, that it's a strange dynamics that these, I should say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 companies have. That is Apple, Google, Meta, Microsoft, and Amazon. Meta posed Microsoft's employees. That's good, but they work on almost all other sorts of projects. For example, if you just look at the next big thing, what they're saying in the next few months or one year is going to happen in the area of Maps, the app of Maps. And if you look what is happening, 80% of the Maps is controlled by Google, maybe 8-10 or 20% controlled by Apple. So Meta has jumped into that along with Microsoft and I think what's the name, Amazon. And yeah, through this, they are trying to take down Maps, Google Maps as well as Apple's Map. Because obviously the huge revenue is there. It's around, Google earns more than $12 billion a year. Simply Alphabet earns more than $12 billion a year just by selling Maps. So it's a strange dynamics. On one side, to enhance your capabilities, you're actually poaching them. But on the other side, you are actually collaborating with them and then trying to take down another competitor. But the primary option is that competition which Meta, or I think Zuckerberg, is placing upon is that he has only, I think, two targets in mind. One is Apple on one side and Google on the other side. I think that is where the entire competition, at least, whatever I am reading, hearing, I think that is the competition right now that he's looking forward to, that I have to compete with these two companies. And for that, they are collaborating with others as well.
The Maps, just to be clear in the sense, Maps generates revenues by placing advertisements on the shops, right? In the sense, when you're searching for a particular place, you might get, let's say, this place is available here and this advertisement, this restaurant is available here, you can go here.
Yeah. Yeah, so Maps has close to $10 billion, so means earns Google Alphabet close to $10 billion. And I think Apple also gets a few things, and Apple has clearly said that by 2023 end, they are going to compete with Google on Maps, means on this Map app a lot. And I think these three companies, along with TomTom, means Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta, along with TomTom, came up, means have sponsored an open, I forgot the name of that particular organization, means so they have means asked this organization to build up, to share their data, which they have done. 59 million, I think TomTom has shared 59 million businesses data with them, and they're trying to make it open so that other developers and users can also develop the app. The primary problem with Google's map is that the businesses don't have access to the data, and they cannot do certain things through which actually they can influence consumers. I think that is where they are going to play. But that is what means my point was not to shift away from this discussion, but the point is that, yes, they're poaching as well as collaborating. So it's a very, very difficult sort of game that is happening up there.
Like one digression is, like, when you look at these big tech like revenues, or the revenues that they make, I mean, the revenues are so huge out of so many different products that sometimes a standalone product makes so much revenue, but you still feel like you can't really grasp a number. Like I was thinking of like AirPods. AirPods brings in like I think $5 billion of revenue, if I'm not wrong. I don't know. Maybe that number is off, but just from like one hardware product, they bring in so much revenue, and their iPhone revenues are also in the double digits or triple digits. So when you look at that whole number of Apple bringing in X number of revenue, and then you think of like, you know, App Store bringing in like, I don't know, 50 billion, 60 billion of revenues. Sometimes you just get lost in these numbers, like, and these numbers are so huge. Yeah, I was looking at YouTube, Google as well. Like YouTube also, I think, brings in about $30 billion of revenue. And you know, it's an acquisition that they make. It is some, these numbers are a little like so crazy sometimes. Anyways.
Yeah, sorry, please continue.
No, go for it, Arpita.
I was saying, yeah, I mean, financially speaking, most of these tech companies, you know, they are into two kind of number games. So maybe their standalone product is bringing them revenues, but not profit. And their minor product is bringing them profits and not as much revenues as the standalone products. For example, in case of Amazon, Amazon is reporting profits. Fortunately, unfortunately, 90 to 95% of that profit is actually coming from cloud computing division, that is Amazon Web Services. If we look at the retail division, that is hardly making any profits.
But their margins are apparently 2%, right? I don't know, 1 or 2%, I heard.
Yeah, in the retail, it's just 1 or 2%. But if you look in the Amazon Web Services, it is there, which is, you know, huge margin, and that is responsible for 90 to 95% of the profits of Amazon. But Amazon, Amazon.com, Amazon.in, their retail division, they're hardly making any profits, and that profit is also inconsistent. But yes, a lot of revenues are coming from Amazon retail division. So what I'm trying to say is that, you know, something that is bringing in revenues may have wafer thin margin, but shareholders love to see revenue and revenue growth. So they keep on playing, you know, on that platform. But at the same time, your company overall cannot be into losses. So these companies, they diversify, they try to find products, which usually happens in the B2B markets, that is business to business market, like cloud computing of Amazon is basically for you know, other businesses where they can store their data and all, and these are like high profit businesses. Maybe you know, in terms of, we're talking about profit margin, there's a huge profit margin out there. So yes, so that's what I'm saying. There are like two kind of games, not games, sorry, it's a wrong word, two kind of financial dimensions that these tech companies focus on. One, they are major market share leading, etc., etc., but maybe not directly responsible for profitability. But the other division responsible for profitability, generally operating in B2B segment and making the company overall more profitable.
That Amazon example is so interesting. I need to look more into that.
You should actually, if you dig deeper, you will find out that this Prime and Netflix are competitors, right?
Yeah.
But Netflix stores its all its storage happens on AWS. It's a very difficult type of scenario where they are working. Means Samsung and Apple are competitors, maybe Sony also, but you see the cameras, who is making it? Sony, which is making, who is making the screen? It is Samsung, which is making. So they are at all different sorts of ways through which this competition is happening. But I think they compete, they show that they are competitors, but I don't think that they are competitors at all. Any of these tech companies, that they are not competitors.
So there is something called as co-optation, which means that the competitors will cooperate and will compete. So there is this academic term called as co-optation. Yeah. So in certain segments, we will cooperate, and in certain segments, we will compete. So yes,
I'll give you another example I just thought of, which is like even the iPhone, right? Like, I mean, what is that? I think Eric Schmidt was on Apple's board, I think in 2006, 2007, and then the iPhone launched. And then soon after that, Google came out with Android in 2007, and then I think Eric had to leave the board, and then Google and Apple became like competitors in the mobile space. So many examples of this, you know, let's cooperate, and then suddenly we'll compete.
And then we will sue each other for certain technology.
Correct.
So it's a very complicated but yet very interesting game, or you can say the way corporate world in the tech field operates is complicated yet very interesting.
So finally, what is the future? Like, where do you see this going? So one, we discussed metaverse, obviously. Any thoughts on like how this might end or how this might go? But also, what about the other businesses? Like, do you think Meta is going to not pay so much attention to the Web2 businesses, and where do you think that's going? Thoughts on those?
Absolutely. As we discussed, what is going to happen eventually to Meta? It really depends on how well their R&D pays off. They are definitely trying to come up with several new products using metaverse technology and, create a platform of their own. Mark Zuckerberg has also, and industry experts have actually also mentioned that metaverse is not going to be become a common thing very soon. It's going to take time. So yes, eventually it will all depend on how these major, big players, big five players, that is, I would say three players rather, Meta, Apple and Microsoft to some extent, as to how far they take the innovation and what kind of products they launch, and what is the receptivity of metaverse. Right now, there is a lot of excitement in a consumer community that, this is going to sound a lot of fun. I can create my avatar, and virtually also, I would be able to, jump in the screen and see or touch one of my friends, shake hands, attend meetings. So yes, concept-wise, this sounds very interesting. But how expensive this is going to be? Are they really going to keep a freemium kind of a model, or are they going to follow a Google model, which is, this is absolutely free for users, and advertisers are paying for it. So it depends on a lot of factors as to how this industry and Meta as a company is going to roll up. Having said that, I do not think that it is going to wash off its hands with Facebook. Definitely Facebook is going to remain. And once, the controversy subsides, this time period subsides, this reputational issue subsides, once consumers and stakeholders tend to forget as to, what will happen, or what Facebook did in the past, definitely under the legal regime, as fortunately now we have very strict laws coming into place in most countries regarding social media companies in general. So once they are in place, I think, social media platforms, Facebook for Mark Zuckerberg is definitely going to remain one of the revenue generating platforms. But at the same time, definitely, if we talk from the futuristic perspective, it has to leverage on metaverse technology, because that is where the next social media era is going to happen. So definitely depends on what kind of products they are offering, what is the satisfaction of the consumers, and it may not be the market leader, it may not be as good as Apple, but definitely it's going to be one of the top players in the field.
And he is also one good thing has happened over the years with Zuckerberg per se, as not as Meta per se, is that he has become very matured now. I think it has come into. He has become very matured and he is listening to stakeholders. Means in the past few years, like in 2022, after he announced Meta, and then Meta was not doing well. One of the leading partner, Altimeter Capitals, they asked him that, why don't you cut down on your metaverse projections for a few years? Means be on track, cut down on the number of, means layoff of you people. He's listening. So he did both of them. And I think the investors are also responding. So they are not always going, what happened to metaverse? What is there? Why aren't you there? So they are also giving him slack. But he, good thing, I means that is our perception, that he has become quite matured now. And he's, and the means, unlike previous, means maybe 5 years down the line when he was thinking only by himself, not that much about the stakeholders, but now I think it is both ways. So he's listening to stakeholders, taking his own decisions. And I think that is the right way of moving ahead. So see, these people are visionaries. 10 years down the line, if he says that metaverse is going to be there, I don't think that means we can deny it. So if he thinks it is going to be there, if he says 10 years down the line, it will be there. But yeah, Ben's good thing about him, that is that he's leading now Meta with much more maturity than he was leading Facebook. So I think the name change, the rebranding, plus I think he has rebranded himself also.
I mean, he's been leading the company since I think he was 19 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Leading one of the most important companies in the world and most, even culturally important as well. So that must have some effect. Anyways, before we close, is there anything else you guys want to touch on before we close?
No. That's it from our side. And I think both Arpita and myself are very thankful to you for this platform.
No, so I am, Arpita, Saurabh, thank you so much for your time and for doing this again. Sorry that the first time, of some of my issues, I could not save the recording. So my apologies on that. And thank you so much for taking the time.